Novelist Tim O'Brien is a Vietnam vet. His early books established him as one of America's great Vietnam writers. In fact, one of those books, Going After Cacciato, won the National Book Award for Fiction in 1979. The aftershocks of the Vietnam era still haunt O'Brien's work. His latest novel is called July, July. It deals with a class reunion of people who were college students during the war. They made very different choices that would shape their lives. Now, 30 years have gone by. The characters remain the same people they were. And so does Tim O'Brien.
Vietnam will always cast a shadow over my work, I'm sure. The same way if you had Toni Morrison here, she would say the black experience will inform whatever she writes, or if you had Conrad, the ocean would inform it. But I'm writing about it less directly now and probably more obliquely.
Thinking about all the characters in July, July, it's as though Vietnam is an extra one in the end, because it affects everybody who's involved in the story, whether they were in Vietnam or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's the story of a class reunion. These people graduated in 1969, so it's natural that Vietnam would play a role in their lives to a greater or lesser extent.
Do you think that there is something about that generation? This book suggests that there was a greater awareness of good and evil, maybe, in 1969 than there is 30 years later.
It seems to me that, I mean, I'm only one person. I'm speaking more now as a citizen than as a writer or as the author of this book. But it seems to me that what you just said is pretty accurate, that as a personal matter, my skin was alive in a way, and my corpuscles of my body were alive and attuned to the rustlings of good and evil in this world, moral choice. I feel now, all these years later, 30 years later, there's a kind of bandwagon effect in this country of partly, I suppose, a consequence of the Persian Gulf War, partly a consequence of, you know, what happened on September 11th, a kind of patriotic, let's go get 'em fervor that wasn't quite so universal back in 1969. There's more debates were raging, for one thing. The debates now about, you know, going into Iraq seem very muted, to the point where I haven't really heard one, a real debate, a national debate I'm talking about, among ordinary people. I'm not talking about CNN talk shows. I'm talking about just the people that I hang out with at the local bar or restaurant. There's a kind of bowing to the inevitability of violence and war that I didn't feel that bowing back in 1969.
What's happened, do you think? Are we really a different country now?
I think there's a kind of terror to speak one's mind. I think people are afraid to say, I mean, I'm afraid to speak my mind. I'm afraid to say things like, boy, we sure tend as a country to demonize our enemies. First it's Tojo, and he's a Satan, and Hitler is a Satan, and Geronimo was a Satan, and Crazy Horse is a Satan, and Ho Chi Minh was a Satan, and Bin Laden's a Satan. They're all Satans, every one of them, without exception. We've turned our enemies into less than human people, and that's a big mistake, to devalue opposition to American policy. I find it disgusting, but I'm afraid to say these things. I'm afraid to say, you know, Saddam Hussein could use President Bush's reasons for attacking Iraq and attack us. We've got chemical weapons. We've got biological weapons. We've got nuclear weapons. We've used nuclear weapons. That's one of Bush's arguments. They've used them. We've got a weirdo in the White House. All the reasons that are being articulated for, you know, an attack on Iraq could be turned right against us. That's terrifying. And thirdly, it's a little bit reminiscent of my time back in the Vietnam War, where this sense of violence is the quick and easy solution to everything that it frightens me.
You know, 30 years ago, those things were more easily talked about. So it was a different time, a different country.
Mm-hmm.
You could protest then and you can't now, or you could protest then and people would pay attention, and you can protest now and nobody will.
Mm-hmm.
Something's happened. But the same people are alive now that mm-hmm. were then. The same generation, the people in your book, are still here. They're just 30 years older.
Mm-hmm. Life is a way of whittling you down, I think. I don't know, it seems to me as if people of my generation care about tending their own backyards and making sure things are in shape in their lives and in their relationships, and their scope of vision has narrowed a bit. Because it is hard to tend your own backyard, to keep relationships together and, you know, and take care
of
children. It's a lot of work, and it's time-consuming, and it's important work. The unfortunate consequence of that may be that less attention is paid to global geopolitics.
Well, I look back. I was a conscientious objector in 1969 and did not go to Vietnam, and I'm not out on the barricades today. 30 years has passed, and I feel as though it ought to be somebody else's job this time. That's not right, though. I hate to articulate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the difference, I mean, that's what the characters in the book face, are these moments of, I don't know, decision. When you decide to file for, you know, CO status or to go on a plane to Vietnam, you're making an over-the-cliff choice that is going to follow you for the rest of your life in various ways. It's going to be in your, and I don't mean issues of guilt or pride. I mean simply issues of defining who you are for the rest of your life. The man you were is part of the man you are. And I think the same is true of the characters in this book. Sure, they've changed. They've gone through 30 years of change. They have lost a little bit of the zip and the passion of political idealism. But at the same time, there's something about the maturing process that's not all bad. It's not bad to pay attention to issues of love and personal relationships. It's not bad to pay attention to a sense of lifelong loss that some of the characters have. The past is part of the present, and July is partly about that. What the title means, July then and July now, they're in some ways identical.
Could that time ever come again for another generation?
Oh, sure. I'm sure it could. I wouldn't exclude anything. Anything's possible in this world. I've lived long enough to know. Some of the things in the late 1960s, I don't know, I'm not sure I want to see return. I'm not sure I want to see the Kent State happen again. I'm not sure I want to see hard hats colliding with young people in New York City and people being beaten up. Some of that stuff I don't want to see again. I do want to see civilized discourse. I want to see people finding the courage to talk about, you know, their values and their beliefs. But not all of the 90s. It's easy to, looking back on the 1960s, to get a bit nostalgic and sentimental. And I think that's a mistake.
Some of what I see in July is that some of that idealism of the 1960s was actually self-centeredism.
A little bit of it was. A little was.
And 30 years gives us the chance to make up for that a little bit.
Yeah, one would hope that, you know, I've never been to a college reunion like the characters in this book, and maybe I never will go. Yet in my heart, I'm kind of both places at once now. I'm back in 1969 in my head, you know, standing in peace vigils. I'm also back in 1969 getting on an airplane to Vietnam. And then I'm the man I am today, a writer. 30 years has transpired now, and I carry with me the ghosts of that time. But I also carry with me the baggage of being 56 years old and a writer and a married man. I'm both. I'm sort of young now in my heart, but I'm also carrying the burdens of, you know, late middle age. That's our generation.
Tim O'Brien is the author of several award-winning novels. His latest book is July, July.